This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Vogue editor Anna Wintour and superstars Cameron Diaz and Julia Roberts fell for a fresh young fashion designer a couple of years ago, Bronx Parish priest Father Andrew Moore O'Connor. Father Andrew has been turning a lot of heads in the world of haute couture with his Goods of Conscience line of casual clothing and accessories. The nonprofit venture ties together the fortunes of Mayan weavers in Guatemala, seamstresses in the Bronx, and natty Americans who can afford to pay $275 a pop for a pair of shorts. Father Andrew is in North Carolina to deliver the baccalaureate sermon at Elon University today, and he joins us now for a talk about his vision for social entrepreneurship. Father Andrew, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you for having me on.
Tell us more about this idea. Where did the idea of Goods of Conscience come from?
Upper West Side of Manhattan, I was in a parish and wanted altar server albs, the white garments that they wear in the church, to participate, not just to buy it out of a catalog, but have people somehow make it. So a lot of coincidences that led me down to Guatemala, in which I went on a retreat. And so I thought yoking together that Guatemalan community and something about America was the initial step of making the albs. And then a parishioner entered me into a competition at Columbia Business School and went on from there.
Because you design vestments.
I do. That's right. But I think primarily I'm an artist, you know, that does a lot of visual arts. And but with the idea of getting people prepared, participating into community and thinking. And
so tell us how Goods of Conscience works.
The cotton is a heritage cotton that's produced in Guatemala. It's the last commercial cotton plantation or finca in Guatemala. It's color grown, and it's sent to weavers in the hills. I send down a reflective fiber from the United States that's woven into the cloth and with little subtle crosses in it. I import it to the United States. In the convent basement of the church, I have a workshop, employ people in the parish, make the clothing, sell it primarily online.
So you've got people, so we're weaving the cloth in Guatemala, mm-hmm. It's sent here, and then it's made into garments at your parish.
That's right.
How much training was involved? Did everybody know what they were doing when the project began? Did you find trained clothing makers, or was that part of the project as well, the training?
Well, I feel like I'm the one that's really going under the training. I'm learning, but fortunately, it's New York is a great place to do fashion, and although it's a vanishing industry there for the people that really know it, but I went through a parish in Harlem and found a woman who was a great Dominican woman who was a great seamstress and has a lot of the couturier skills. She's really helped to teach me about making great clothing. So
how many people do you have working in New York?
There are five in New York now.
And what about in Guatemala?
There's two teams of weavers. So there's a lighter cloth and a heavier cloth. Called the lighter cloth is floor loom, and that's there's a team of four to do that, and then 20 doing the backstrap weaving in a village called San Pedro Cruzan near Chiquicao.
And the cloth that you send down, the yarn that you send down and have woven in, serves a particular purpose. Tell us about that.
I have trademarked the cloth Social Fabric. The purpose of the reflective fiber is, with respect to the Guatemalans, is to protect their livelihood. So that that cloth, that fiber is hand woven in It ensures that the Guatemalans are only using their own indigenous cotton, which is color grown and resists pests naturally. And so without that, they would probably opt for other types of cotton sources that would be cheaper and produce a cheaper product.
So this is prevents knockoffs and counterfeit clothing and that sort of thing, so that we know where it came from and...
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and give us an idea of what kinds of clothing you make.
Well, I do. I focus on biking you know, what would it be like to be somebody in, I'm thinking about it really in New York, that on a bike, you have comfortable clothing that you can go into an office, so it's formal, or has formal possibilities, but it's also athletic enough to be able to use out in the street. And so it's a type of high-fashion, utilitarian biking clothing. There's a vintage quality to it because of the texture of it looks kind of tweedy, and the natural palette is very pleasing. And but I do evening wear. I did an event at the Plaza in New York during Fashion Week, you know, so it had to be a little bit more of, you know, interesting usage of the hand-woven fabric with silks and...
Well, apparently the fashion world has taken you seriously. How did you get those designs in front of Anna Wintour and Cameron Diaz at all?
That really is the work of God, Frank. That because the it's New York's a small world, and I just knew somebody who was a Vogue editor, and or knew somebody who knew somebody who was a Vogue editor, and was helping them with their marriage. And when they came up to the Bronx, they had heard that I did the line of clothing. They took some pictures, and the next day, this is back in March of 2009. Cameron Diaz, who was the subject of the piece, said, "You know, I really only want to do green clothing," and she's the queen of green. So they had to scrap what clothing that they had chosen for her and send out something new. But as you know, there's a paucity of sustainable clothing that looks good in the high fashion world. So they came and took my clothing, sent it out to Cameron Diaz, and she picked out what she liked, which was a pair of Tattersall shorts. And it was going to be the cover of, it was a runner-up for the actual cover shot. You know, it's a really beautiful photograph of her. And so then Anna Wintour wrote about us, which is a really important, you know, 3-point shot or something. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, no, that's powerful stuff. And it's beautiful clothing. You've brought some with you, and you've got, you know, a pair of shorts with actually two-tone green because, you know, if you're using natural fiber, it's going to look different depending on which season it was picked, right?
That's right, yeah, which is, it's nice to live with something that's still living on you. And, a fascinating aspect of the chlorophyll, you know, there's no dyes used in it, and when you dip it in water, it gets a more deep green. It seems to, and it fades in the sun, just like plants do. So.
How much income do you generate, both in Guatemala and in New York? You have an idea?
It varies on sales and donations, but you know, it's been sort of around $10,000 a month.
Wow. So that's the good news. It's good for the earth. We're talking about organic cotton. We're talking about industries that help indigenous people make and keep money in their country and in their city. Now, what about charging $275 for an article of clothing that is high fashion, that is really a kind of, in some ways, a vanity item?
Right. I mean, it seems like that... you know, is a high price point. Although, in terms of the actual making of the clothing, it's a barely break even type of price point because it's something handmade is very involved. I think the now my parishioners in the Bronx are not wealthy people, and you know. They buy the clothing, and they come by, and they like the idea of having something locally made, so they're able to countenance the price point for, you know, and it's satisfying to see social fabric, you know, our parish is where Jennifer Lopez is from. So it's nice to see the social fabric on the block, if you will.
Would you expand this? Is it scalable? Can it be built even larger?
Yeah, well, that's the bigger idea. That's the one that that Columbia University was interested in. They thought, Because the overall idea of goods of conscience is that you create a benefice system. A benefice is an old way of producing income for a monastery, or it's a Benedictine tradition. And I think that with so many underutilized parish spaces of the 20,000 parishes in the United States, you know, there's an opportunity to set up these workshops, and that's what's scalable about it. I also would like to, you know, to promote the creativity into the hands of more and more local parishes. Local, I mean, it seems to be logical that people should make things where they are and consume them where they live.
That's kind of interesting, because the Pope Benedict's encyclical on capitalism really should have been a charge to all parishes to say, how are we doing business? How is each of us in the parish making our living, and how is the parish itself? It strikes me that this is one way to have that conversation with a possible answer.
That's right. You know, I think we really need to deepen our obviously, it's called goods of conscience. We need to develop our conscience about how we act as consumers. And goods of conscience is based on very well thought out pillars, four pillars of Catholic social teaching. You know, the honoring who makes something, the individuality, that it serves the common good, that subsidiarity each plays its part, and finally that you remember the poor.
Father O'Connor, it's great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Frank.
On the State of Things, we're talking with Father Andrew Moore O'Connor. He's going to deliver the baccalaureate sermon at Elon University this afternoon. You can find out more about his clothing line at goodsofconscience.com. Just ahead, looking back at North Carolina on the brink of civil war. On the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.